Are you psyched up for a Sunday Super Bowl? The Seahawks take on the New England Patriots at 3:30 Pacific time. For the last few years, we've heard a lot about the 12th man, Seattle's rabid fan base. These fans are so loud, so raucous, they've caused measurable earthquakes during home games. But what drives sports fandom psychologically? Eric Simmons is a diehard sports fan, and he's the author of The Secret Lives of Sports Fans, The Science of Sports Obsession. He told David Hyde, fandom has some real psychological benefits.
I think the fans who are the diehard, long-term, I'm there thick and thin all the time, what they get from this relationship is really, you know, the kind of meaning in their lives, this source of permanent identity. I'm a Seahawks fan through thick and thin. I have loyalty. It's this, you know, expression of personal value. And so the people who are kind of bandwagon fans, they don't have that meaning. They don't have that relationship with the team. But right now it's fun. It's just fun to, you know, be around and enjoy this kind of dramatic event. And so I think you can kind of separate them out. And there's actually a lot of really interesting science of groups about why the people who have sacrificed kind of resent the people who are showing up now.
Tell me about that. What's going on there?
Yeah, I mean, this is really fairly deeply rooted in us. And a lot of it has to do with, you know, group cohesion is something that is important to us, that's necessary to us. And really, it's one of those things, especially, you know, I mean, the argument here is kind of evolutionary in origin, but it's this argument that, in a tribal society, you don't have that much to make people stay in your group. That, you know, if your group's not doing well, there's no real reason why somebody can't bail and go to the group that is. And, you know, that we could basically be permanent bandwagoners and we just follow around whoever's successful. And so we've kind of developed these ways of shaming people and of distrusting people who aren't fully committed to the group. Because, you know, this is one of the classic social science dilemmas, right? If you are sacrificing a little bit to be in this group to get the benefits of the group, then you better make sure that everybody else is also sacrificing and not just free riding. And so in some sense, you know, all these things that you see all over the place in politics and in finance and, you know, all these kind of classic social science dilemmas about making sure that people aren't free riding and making sure that your sacrifice and reward are equal to everybody else's. You know, we're really programmed for this stuff in a way. And we notice it in sports fans, too. I mean, it's the classic, wait a minute, they're getting all the benefit of this, and they didn't put in the work to do it.
They didn't experience the psychic pain that I did, having been a Seattle sports fan for this long. They're just jumping along at the last minute, and they might be gone tomorrow, whereas I'll still be there even if my team doesn't win, basically. Sounds like what you're saying.
Right, and it's exactly what I'm saying, and you know what's going to kill you forever is that really there's not that much evidence that the reward will be that much worse for them. So they jumped in without any of the psychic trauma. And they're going to be happy. It's like, wait a minute, that's not fair.
Eric Simmons is the author of The Secret Lives of Sports Fans, The Science of Sports Obsession. So when does sports obsession or just this kind of serious fandom that you're talking about become a full-fledged sports addiction? Is there such a thing?
Yeah, and this is super fascinating. So I kind of, when I started this book, thought I was going to go, you know, find some Harvard neuroscientist and they were going to say, here, you know, here's what addiction is in the brain. Like when that particular spot lights up, then we know you're addicted. And instead, the scientists I talked to kind of redirected me. They said, well, look, there's this kind of loop in your brain where you get a reward for something and the reward kind of makes you remember it. It locks in this memory and the memory kind of gives you this motivation to do it again. And you get this kind of cycle of passion. And, you know, really the addiction comes in when people become so obsessed with sports or with anything that they can't do it. But it's kind of tough because, you know, the most passionate people, the ones who are really strongly motivated, you know, look, Richard Sherman is borderline obsessed with this to the point that it might be unhealthy because that passion is what makes him the greatest. Anybody, you know, the greatest cello player on earth has this cycle that motivates them to practice and practice and practice way more than, you know, I'm not motivated enough to pursue that in that way.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it's basically kind of defined outside of this. If sports is causing you to, you know, to ruin yourself financially, to ruin your relationships, to ruin your, you know, the healthy other parts of your life, then you've taken it too far. Then you're addicted.
Eric Simmons is the author of The Secret Lives of Sports Fans, The Science of Sports Obsession. And I also wanted to ask about, you know, it strikes me that being a loyal fan, we talked about the difference between that and being a fair weather fan, is really kind of tough psychologically. If they win, you're excited. If they lose, you're really physically miserable. I mean, I know that there have been studies about that. Why do people stick with it despite the psychic anguish they experience?
You know, oddly enough, the winning and losing part of sports is not really, if you were in a long-term relationship with your sports team, which is a word I use a little bit loosely here, but if you're in this long-term relationship with your sports team, the winning and losing, the little ups and downs are not actually the primary important part of this, and that you get so much kind of on the side in terms of you know, being part of a group, having this connection, having a source of identity, you know, being able to say, I'm a Seahawks fan, I'm loyal, all these kind of things that become very fundamental to you are a little bit more important to your brain, I guess, than this little temporary, well, we won and I'm happy, or we lost and I'm unhappy. There is a source of meaning, a way to connect with your friends, a way to connect with family, a way to connect with totally random strangers walking down the street wearing a Seahawks jersey right now, that is something rare and wonderful in your life. And, you know, so if they lose, like, yeah, you're unhappy for a week, but you have this thing forever. And I think, you know, as a weird addendum to this, Seattle's one of the most interesting places to talk about this, because the identity scientists I talked to are like, look, we need to be able to answer this question. Who am I? You know, and one way you can answer that is I'm a fan. And they argue that, look, this is an increasingly difficult time for people in America to answer that. You know, divorce is as high as it's ever been. It's harder to say I'm a husband, or I'm a wife, I'm a family person. You know, it's jobs have changed so much that people are no longer going into careers for 40 years. You can't say I'm a career person and this is my thing. But the one thing they really can't take from you is your fandom. I you can be a fan of that team and nobody can take it away from you unless the owner moves the team. And that, I mean, you can see that is an incredibly traumatic event. And these guys liken it. They say it's like a death in the family, because it really is that kind of level.
You're thinking now of the Sonics, I take it.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And I think, and speaking,
you know,
you
see how traumatic that is.
Speaking of psychic anguish, do you have any advice? I guess it wouldn't be clinical advice, but you've done a lot of research into this topic for Seattle fans going into the Super Bowl. I don't want to jinx this, but just in case.
I would say two things. First of all, a lot of the actual, like, in your brain level of chemical happiness and frustration is based on your expectation of the event. So in a way, your brain is this incredible odds-making machine that every time, in any context, but sports is one case, you know, anytime you expect to get a reward tells you how likely you think it is that you're going to get that. If you don't expect a reward at all, and then it delivers, you're going to just have this insane dopamine blowout. The converse of that is, you know, if you really expect something to happen and it doesn't, it's really frustrating. And so the lower you can get your expectations in advance of the Super Bowl, the better you're going to be, you know, if Seattle actually wins, because then you're going to be so happy. And if Seattle loses, it's like, yeah, that's what we expected all along. The other thing is that following the game, you know, acknowledge that it will be frustrating if they lose. And that's actually a valid, I mean, for me, a lot of this comes in because it just felt so shameful to be so emotionally drained and so unhappy after a game. And I think one of the things I've kind of learned is that you have to acknowledge that there is a fairly good reason that you are so upset, and that this is not predetermined behavior that you have to be, you know, going out and wrecking things. That's not human nature to do that. We have self-control. Even when you're disappointed, you can exert it.
Eric Simmons is author of The Secret Lives of Sports Fans, The Science of Sports Obsession. He spoke with David Hyde. And in case it slipped your mind, the Super Bowl starts at 3:30 Pacific time on Sunday. Seahawks take on the New England Patriots.